It's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I'm Gene Bolduc, your host, and I am joined today by Sharon Hirsch, the Chief Executive Optimist for Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina. And she's giggling now because she knows I'm right.
That's
You're
exactly
in charge
right.
of optimism. Is that correct?
That's exactly right.
So if somebody comes into work and they're just kind of, you know, I don't know, bad day in traffic coming into the office, is it your job to sit across them from them at their desk and stay there until they cheer up?
Absolutely not.
No. So you're, but optimism. So optimism, the difference between that and optimism is that as the optimist, it's your job to believe that they're going to cheer up, not your job to make them cheer up, right?
No, it's my job to help them understand that they are going to get the job done.
They're going to get the job done. They can cheer up when they get home.
They can do this. We can do this.
We can do this. Yes. We can change traffic patterns in Raleigh. This is what you can do? What a breakthrough. This is fantastic.
We can build strong, safe, stable families.
And that's better roads, by the way. We could do that, too. You know, we could do both.
We probably could.
We probably could, because only cheerful people who are looking forward and seeing all that traffic in front of them, you know.
Yeah. Have a vision.
Have a vision for a road without all those cars on it.
That's right.
Wow. So do you live in Durham, but you work in Raleigh most of the time.
That's
right. You know, when you're not all over the state and elsewhere.
That's right.
So do you have many issues with traffic? I mean, I don't know why I get off on these things at the top of my show, but I do. Do you have any issues with getting over to Raleigh on a daily basis and regular basis that you'd like to vent about right now?
I can say that in the morning, I like the time change this week only because the sun's not directly in my eyes
Driving east, right?
And driving east on the days when the sun is out, the traffic is worse because we all have to slow down
because
be
everybody's squinting, right? Yeah. Well, you know, I live in Orange County and you know, worked in Durham for many years, and I had that exact same thing, right? At that, you know, I also think that's punishment for getting up early enough in the morning to be on the way to work.
That's right.
I think it's a punishment. Yeah. I don't know what I did to deserve that punishment.
I don't know what you did either, but I find that if I leave at 9 o'clock instead of at 8:30, I can get to my office in 20 minutes. It can be 35 minutes.
Or you could leave 15 minutes sooner and get there at the same time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, my employer wouldn't have seen it my way about how important it was for me to leave at 9 when they opened at 8:30. But I get your point. Of course, that's the advantage of being the chief executive optimist.
Yeah,
you can roll in at 9:30 if you want to.
I could, but I'm usually working from home. At 7,
you take a break to go to the office.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get that. I know you too well. It's entirely true. So Sharon, we're after that little left turn, we're here today, and you've agreed just because I'm so persuasive or something. I don't even have chocolate here in the studio. I don't know how I got you to agree to this, but you've agreed to do two programs with us because next month, April, is Prevent Child Abuse Awareness Month, and we have so much to talk about that we couldn't pack it into this show, especially when I'm going to blow 3 minutes talking about traffic. But, you know, that's an icebreaker thing, right?
That's right.
That's about breaking ice in the good way. We haven't had that much ice this winter, by the way. Just want to get that out of the way, that after the last couple of weeks in weather forecasting, I've really wondered when we had this scheduled. I thought, anything could happen. It's getting.
We got lucky though.
We've been okay this year. You know, it's not been too insane. I'm saying this now. We could come outside after the show, and then there'd be a foot of snow on the ground. Shh. Right. Okay. So what the forecast? What a great app that is. So let's talk about some issues that are in the news recently. This past we're taping on Pi Day, March 14th. And this past Sunday, there was a wonderful segment on 60 Minutes that I think you stopped every man, woman, and child walking by a computer, or your door, to tell them to watch Oprah on 60 Minutes as she discovered and took us through her journey of discovering the research on ACEs. And now I'm just going to ask you that nice, big, broad question,
sure.
Which is, Can you explain that to us and how you think that segment went and what it does for the work that you're doing?
Sure. Well, ACEs stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences, and it's really about childhood trauma. That would be the way that most of us might describe it. And we've learned in the last 20 or so years that there's a dose-response relationship between what happens to you in childhood that might be an adverse experience and the impact on your life, health, and mental health outcomes.
Right.
And it's really extraordinary. So the kinds of things that are included in the original study for the Adverse Childhood Experiences study included physical and emotional and sexual abuse mm-hmm. or neglect, substance abuse in the home, or parental divorce or losing a parent. Mm-hmm. So big traumatic things that either impact you personally or were in your household.
Right.
And the more or the higher your ACE score, the higher your incidence of having experienced one of those things, the greater your chances are of developing heart disease or lung cancer, depression, more likely to commit suicide.
Diabetes, too, right?
Almost every leading cause of death in our country can be correlated back to what happened to us early
right.
in life.
Right.
And so now we know that a child might forget what happened to them very early in life or might have repressed it in their memory, but their body doesn't forget.
Right.
And it impacts all the different systems. For really young kids whose brains are just starting to develop, that's why it's so critical that we talk about this, because
right.
their brains can get wired differently.
Right.
And that's what they really talked about in the segment on 60 Minutes, is that children's fight or flight mm-hmm. or freeze instincts get hyper-developed when they experience a lot of trauma.
Right.
And if that happens, that means their executive functioning underdevelops. And
right.
that has consequences for their learning.
Mm-hmm.
It has consequences for how they interact with other people. They're going to be more likely to act out in different ways.
Right.
And so all of that is at the core of what we do, because we're
right.
trying to create safe, stable, nurturing relationships and environments for children so that their brains can develop to their full potential.
Right. And it doesn't mean that you're expecting or planning that nothing negative will ever happen to kids.
Oh, no.
It's not that. It's actually... as I understand it, it's more about equipping them to be resilient when those things do happen. Bad things happen in your life. Somebody you love dies, maybe unexpectedly, and you know mm-hmm. you can't help that. But how that affects you and how hard that knocks you down
mm-hmm.
can be a direct relationship from this, right?
Absolutely. And one of the things that they found in the ACE study originally and has continued to just be seen over and over again is that ACEs are really, really common. Most
right.
of us have experienced at least one. I have an ACE score of one. I don't know anyone personally that I think that even has an ACE score.
Who has
of zero.
A score of zero? Yeah.
I mean, most of us know someone who has
yeah.
had a family member who had a substance abuse issue, or their
right.
parents got divorced, or had a parent die as a child, or there was abuse and neglect in their home.
Yeah.
And the most important thing that we know that to prevent those things from happening or to buffer it, because we know that there's a buffering impact that fosters resilience, is
right.
the presence of a safe, stable relationship
right.
from an adult in that child's life. So it could be a teacher. It could be a coach.
A grandparent that lives nearby.
Right. It can be
right.
a youth leader at church.
A neighbor. Yeah.
Somebody who takes a special interest and is there for
yeah,
a good
so
bit
that
of
when
time.
Something happens, that this child can go to that person and say anything, and no matter
yes.
how bad it is.
And have someone say to them,
and,
it's
you know,
going to be okay.
It's going to be okay.
And you're a good person, and
yeah.
it's going to be all right.
And we'll figure this out. You know, we're in this together. Now that you've
yes.
told me, we're in it together, and we will figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, it doesn't, that doesn't put too much power in the child's hand. Children in that circumstance, they don't want all of this to be up to them. That's not what's mm-hmm. best for them, but they need to be able to say whatever they have to say to get it out.
They do, and they need someone who believes in them
right.
and believes that they can do it and
right.
be who they want to be.
Right, and this teenager who was, well, actually, I suppose she's not a teenager any longer, the young woman who was interviewed at the beginning of the segment on 60 mm-hmm. Minutes, who fairly matter-of-factly described that her father had molested her, abused her since from the time she was 4 until she was 14. She described that not unlike how I might describe the weather. She was pretty dispassionate about it, and obviously had made a separation from mm-hmm. it. And that was that brought in the interview. I thought the most important point. I think Oprah agrees with me, which was that when she talked about this with the first adult that she told about it, the response was, "What happened?" Mm-hmm. You know, not what's wrong with you. What happened to you? And that is an absolutely vital separation in language that. My goodness, anybody can understand that when you've been through something awful and you have to try to tell somebody about it, if you can just go through and explain the facts of what happened instead of, because we tend to process how mm-hmm. we feel at the same time as we're describing what happened. Mm-hmm. This happened and I was scared and so I did this and so forth. And your feelings come mm-hmm. along with it, not necessarily in a welcome way. I thought that was a very, very powerful interview, and she was a very impressive person.
Yeah, it's really interesting. We're also screening the documentary film Resilience right. all across the state, and I know folks here in Orange County have been screening right. it with us, and that's one of the key messages of that film, too.
Right.
And it's stepping back and saying, maybe you're a teacher in a school and you've got kids that are acting out in your classroom and they're frustrating you.
Right.
But instead of saying, what's wrong with you? Why can't you behave?
Yeah.
The question that we need to be asking ourselves is, what happened to that child and how can I help
right, right.
them respond differently in this situation?
Right.
And that's why there's a movement towards trauma-informed schools all
right.
across the country and across North Carolina.
Right.
There are lots of different ways we can respond to it. But
right.
our work at Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina is really focusing on strengthening the parents and caregivers so that we can prevent it from happening in the first place
right.
and have appropriate skills in place to
right,
mitigate
to
it when it does.
To respond to it when it starts showing. Okay. We're gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk more about the trauma-informed schools because I think that's really, really important in today's situation with guns. And we're going to talk about that, too, when we come back with Sharon Hirsch from Prevent Child Abuse. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler here at 97.9 The Hill. And we're back talking with Sharon Hirsch, the chief executive optimist, also chief executive officer of Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina. Sharon is here to talk with us about child abuse prevention and to a lesser extent, events that will occur in the next, I guess, 6 weeks or so for observations of child abuse, spit it out, Jean, child abuse
prevention
month and awareness month of April. You know, there are so many awareness things that occur in April because April's such a great month for that. You know, it's spring and it's your month. It's yes. optimist month.
That's right.
Right? Everybody feels, you probably felt like somebody was stealing your optimism in February when all of the daffodils were coming up and we were having 70 and 80 degree days. And you said, Did I fall asleep and miss
child abuse prevention month?
I missed April. That would be your nightmare, right?
It
you'd
really
go
would.
To sleep in mid-March and then wake up in May and you missed it. You just slept right through it. That would be awful.
It would be awful.
That would be awful. Is that Rumpelstiltskin? Who am I trying to think of? No, the other
Rip
guy.
Rip Van Winkle.
Rip Van Winkle. That's who I'm trying to think of. That's what happened to him.
It is. And it's not going to happen
to me. And look how he turned out. Terrible. Anyway. Well, I try to keep it light here on the Weekend Water Cooler because once in a while we have to talk about unpleasant topics. And one unpleasant topic that we have, Sharon, is guns in our society, in schools. One of the things that Oprah talked about in covering the ACE study and studies and so forth is her coming to understand the relationship between chaos and negative outcomes for kids as they're growing up and as they're coming to understand why do kids react or have different outcomes. For example, she had a lot of difficulty and abuse in her childhood, but by her and I think everybody's standard, she's had a pretty good life and has come to grips with the abuse that she suffered, has come to understand its role in her life. It's part of her. She gets all that. She wanted to know why is it that she's done okay when another kid who may have gone through less suffered more? And I thought that was explained very well with what you just talked about, with having a responsible, reliable, caring adult in your life who could get you through that segment of your life and help you come to grips with it and own yourself all the way through it. But they talked a lot about chaos, and I thought about my parents divorced when I was in high school, so I guess that gives me one ace point. Not a point that I really want, but it gives me one ace point. And my father lost his job right at the same time. And what I remember about that was just feeling a brick in my chest, like all the time. Mm-hmm. And I realized that that's anxiety. Mm-hmm. That was from the sense of chaos of who's going to pay for our house? Where are we going to live? It's how are fear. We going to eat? Who's going to take care of us, right?
It's fear.
And my father was very depressed and suffered greatly, which as a teenager didn't matter to me very much. Because I was like, me, what about me? Mm-hmm. You're the adult. You're supposed to be figuring this stuff out. Mm-hmm. And you're supposed to be explaining it to me, not having me take care of how you feel. And that gave me plenty of anger to deal with, right?
Right.
And that's the kind of thing that we're talking about when we talk about chaos in kids' lives. We're not talking about a busy soccer schedule, right? We're talking about real...
That's good.
Scary. That's good. That's not even chaos, really. That's schedules.
Well,
schedules can help with the chaos.
One of the things that we like to explain is that there is good stress. Mm-hmm. You know, if you weren't worried before you were going to take the exam in high school,
right?
You probably wouldn't.
You probably wouldn't study. Yeah.
But it's the toxic constant with no buffering that is described as toxic stress that really impacts your entire body.
Right. And this is like an existential thing that I was feeling, you know, like what will become of me kind of thing. Even if that's a case where, and teenagers can be overly dramatic about what's at stake and whatever, I can kind of hear it in the background of my mind right now, either or both of my parents saying, you know, don't be ridiculous. I mean, you have grandparents and we have family members who love you and, you know, you don't have to, you know, that's not a thing you really need to be worried about. But, you know, that wouldn't have mattered to me very much. I would want to see, what's your proof?
Exactly.
Let's see it. You know, it's very show me kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And kids really need that, right? I mean, they need even if it's small things. Like dinner is still at 6.
Yeah,
don't
they need
be late.
Structure and routine. That's one of the things that we know very early on about good parenting skills.
Yes,
are to have that kind of structure and schedule that kids can rely on. They need to know what they can rely on.
Right, and I've recently become a grandmother, and I take care of my grandson a couple of days a week as a daycare provider. And it is striking, and, you know, you forget this because my kids are obviously older now, but you forget how these things are very early in life, that if you have these schedules and structures, and when we go into your room, it's to go to sleep. We don't go in there to play and watch TV and listen to loud music and, you know, whatever. Can you imagine that with a baby? Oh, my God, what a nightmare.
No.
But it really is amazing how if you can get these things set fairly early with kids, how much easier it is
later.
It's pretty much instant reward, because when you have this routine set for here's how it works, you feed him, you change him, you play with him, and then you put him down to sleep, and then you repeat.
Yes.
And if you do it that same way every time, it really works. Yes, it's like a little miracle.
Well, it's how their brains are getting wired.
Right.
They know what to expect.
Right.
They know the routine.
And the very best part of that is teaching him to laugh, which is coming along now very, very nicely. Yeah. This is how they hook you. This is when they get you to sign on to give them a car when they're 16. I can tell that now. Okay, so I've put it off, and we're gonna come back a little bit, and we're in just a moment. And we're gonna talk a little bit about guns in schools and just guns in our society and how that's playing. You know, we've now got this generation of kids that have grown up with turning on the TV on a regular basis and seeing shootings, and seeing lots of people getting killed in shootings, and that's sort of that's an ordinary part of their lives, and it's been normalized in a way that's a very bad thing. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about that, and then, of course, we're going to talk about things that we can do and specific things that we can do to help make kids' lives better. And we're talking with Sharon Hirsch from Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler at 97.9 The Hill. We're back, and we're talking with Sharon Hirsch, Chief Executive Optimist for Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina, a wonderful organization. I encourage absolutely everyone to go to preventchildabusenc.org, and if you do nothing else at that website, hit the donate button and do the right thing. Sharon, let's talk for just a moment about guns in schools. I'm sure that the organization doesn't particularly have positions on this, and I'm not asking you that. Is it not sort of immediately obvious that more guns in schools would mean potentially more chaos? Isn't that, you know, in having every school district concoct a way of dealing with this societal problem that's kind of spilling into the schools, it's not really a school problem, is it?
I don't know that it's really a school problem, but I think that the appropriate response to that kind of environment is really to be a more caring, nurturing environment.
Right. Yeah.
That has...
And conceal carry doesn't seem like an answer to...
No, and it's a...
Toward that solution.
Right. And, you know, we talked earlier about trauma-informed schools.
Right.
And we know that that a very punitive approach...
Right.
...to education, a three-strikes kind of approach to education,
yeah,
really focusing on punishment as the form of discipline instead, mm-hmm, of really teaching children.
Right.
And that's not going to mitigate or buffer,
right,
any trauma that,
right,
kids might be experiencing. We know that kids are telling their parents stories. We hear about it all the time, that children are now having nightmares about being afraid that they may be shot at school.
Right.
Or that there could be a shooting and one of their friends could be hurt.
Right.
The alternative approach would be for teachers to understand how to ask what happened to you,
mm-hmm,
instead of what's wrong with you.
Right.
And to implement practices that help kids regulate their emotions and respond more appropriately if they've got a big anxiety response,
right,
to things. And so there are schools that are seeing great success doing things like guided meditation before class.
What a great
idea. And it can
idea.
Be just listening to an app on your phone that you can play for the class to get children to learn how to
just breathe and relax.
And relax, yeah, and get to that centered place.
Right.
Teaching kids how to practice yoga is also another,
yeah,
great thing to be doing in schools. That's a very different approach than adding more resource officers or arming teachers or really emphasizing those active shooter drills.
And things that are reactive to, mm-hmm, a kid that's acting out. You're talking about things that, and we talk about this a lot, about taking it upstream and mm-hmm, about doing things that just take the air out of the tension, mm-hmm, and the chaotic problem, mm-hmm, itself. I'm reminded that about 20 years ago in Chapel Hill's Blue Ribbon Task Force that we were looking at data that said, at the risk of shortcutting all the background, that basically said that when white kids act out, they go to therapy. When black kids act out, they go to the detention, they go to in-school suspension, they're punished. And to me, that sounds exactly like what happened to you versus what's wrong with you. And engaging the child in a what happened approach across all kinds of lines, both as parents, as teachers, as employers. You know, teenagers have jobs and sometimes they have issues. And, you know, I can't imagine coming in as a boss and just automatically saying, what's wrong with you? I mean, that's how I was as a boss, that if one of my employees was in a state of great agitation or whatever, what happens? They come in my office, I close the door, we sit down, and I say, okay, what's going on? What happened? Yeah. You know, I'm not going to be all about laying them out. I mean, if I have to do that, I would. That would be later.
Yeah, right? You ask the questions and you seek first to understand. But I think one of the fundamental things here is it goes back to what our mission is. And that we know that kids are less likely to be abused and neglected when they're in a safe, stable, nurturing relationship and environment.
Right.
Schools are an environment where kids need to feel like there's safety, stability, and a nurturing presence.
Right, right. And you know, all the things that you're describing about yoga, about meditation, all of these things would probably benefit. And I know that schools are doing this. I know some of them are. Just immediately prior to end of grade and end of course testing as well, that you can just kind of chill, block it all out. And if your teacher was a person who could guide a meditation pretty well, it's not that your teacher could plant those answers in your head, although that would be nice. You know, think about the quadratic formula. Right. Remember that
there are
a squared plus b squared is equals c squared.
But there are lots of ways to do that. A teacher doesn't have to be a trained yogi.
No, but that would be cool, right?
That would be cool for all PE teachers to be trained yogis.
Right.
But there are, you know, there are free apps today. We live in a world where we all have these iPhones, and actually, everyone on our staff, we all have the Headspace app, and we actually go through a 10-minute meditation on our phone before every staff meeting.
And my goodness, they need it, don't they?
We all need it. Everybody needs it. And it helps us get...
It's such a great idea.
We just get ourselves centered and ready for our meeting, and we always end up having a great meeting as a result of that because we're taking time out
to just
be ready.
Yeah, just be ready. And, you know, in our society where we are pounded with information. I mean pounded, just bombarded constantly. Even in spaces where we don't particularly realize that it's kind of washing over us. You know, when you're waiting in line at the drugstore to pick something up and the music is coming and you go, oh my God, this song, I just can't, you know, and then you're trying to go to sleep that night and you can't get that song out of your head and you don't remember, was that Paul Simon or James Taylor or who was that?
Well, we all have Headspace on our phones.
Yeah.
We were able to get this app for everybody, and it's an amazing thing because there are also guided meditations for going to sleep. You're talking about having trouble getting to sleep at night. You can just do the meditation. And I've, believe me, I've had nights when I get up in the middle of the night.
There's been a night or two, I'm sure.
And
you have adult children. I know this is true.
This is exactly true. So I've done that, and within 10 minutes, I'm out cold.
No kidding.
It's amazing.
Oh, I have to get that now.
There are a couple of different ones.
I'm so glad you could get me this app.
I'm here to help you.
Yeah, and if I get the app and I discover that it sounds an awful lot like somebody I won't name snoring, then I'm going to know it's really for me.
Well,
then I'll always
call the voice on Headspace our boyfriend Nigel.
Boyfriend Nigel?
Yes, he's got a very nice Australian accent.
An Australian accent?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Well, this is so nice. Yes, you know, who knew it was going in this direction? Wow. Well, thank you, Nigel. Well, we're going to take a break and we're going to breathe for just a moment.
We are.
While Nigel tells us all about wonderful products that you can buy and that were recommended to you by WCHL. So we're going to be back talking with Sharon Hirsch a little bit more for just a few more minutes. And we'll be back right after this. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. We're back with more with Sharon Hirsch of Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina, a wonderful organization. As I mentioned before, please go to preventchildabusenc.org and do the right thing, pressing that donate button, or at least take a little walk, take a few minutes, take your deep breath, maybe with boyfriend Nigel, and just take in all the wonderful information on the website where you can learn about all the programs, trainings that your organization might like to engage in. An awful lot of organizations can benefit from training to learn about prevention factors and just the fun things that your organization can do to help Sharon's organization, which is probably more than you realize, I would say, right? I mean, no matter what you do, your organization can help make things better for kids.
Absolutely. If you're a faith community, for example, it's where you're going to find families and families that need help. Right. And there are some great things that many congregations already do to support and strengthen families, and they probably don't think about it as prevention. But when you start to put that lens on things,
that's true.
And it's things like having fellowship groups where folks can get together because social connections are a protective factor.
Right.
Concrete support in times of need. How many congregations collect food for food pantries?
Right.
But one of the things that congregations are really good at is when a new baby's born. Everybody
Yay.
Makes meals. That is an incredible thing for
man.
Congregations
so
to do.
Important.
It's huge
it's so
for new
important.
Families.
It's just gigantic.
It's huge, and that's prevention.
Yes.
If you are in a...
Because exhausted people sometimes don't make good decisions.
Exactly.
Yes.
And colicky babies are really tough.
Oh, man. They
parenting
really are.
Is really, really hard. And that's the big message that we're trying to get out is that parenting is hard, and it's okay to ask for help.
Yes.
And there are lots of places where you can get help, and a faith community is a big one.
Yeah.
If you're an employer.
Yeah.
Employers, more and more here in the Triangle, are implementing family-friendly policies, and that's a big deal. We are thrilled to see so many local governments passing paid family leave.
Yeah.
That is an absolute concrete support. Commitment to paying people a living wage.
Yeah.
Is a concrete support that prevents abuse and neglect.
It does.
And it's...
Because that helps make housing more affordable.
Mm-hmm.
And when people have housing that they can afford and jobs that sufficiently support their families, that means that maybe they can have only one job instead of two and three.
And there's less stress.
You know, and that means that parents can spend more time with their kids and know them better and be better bonded with them. It means that they have money to spend in restaurants and buying clothes and being out in the community. And maybe the kid can be in a soccer league and, you know, stuff like that that does cost a little money sometimes. And All of those things conspire to make things better for kids.
Absolutely.
And better for the community overall. It's not only kids that benefit.
Absolutely.
It's all of us that benefit.
It's all of us.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. Not only are ACEs about all of us, but the thing, all of us have a role to play.
Right. Now, Prevent Child Abuse Month coming up. You have a fun run that's coming up in about a month from now as we record today in April. Tell us about Tell us about the whole shebang of events that have going.
It's going to be great fun. It'll be on Saturday, April 14th over at the Dorothea Dix campus in Raleigh. So it's a gorgeous place, and it's got an incredible view of downtown Raleigh, and it also happens to be the campus where the Department of Health and Human Services
That's
is headquartered.
Break. Right, yes.
And right down the street from NC State and WREL and other places that are all along Western Boulevard. And we'll be out there having a fun run and walk. We're doing it together with Wake County Human Services.
What time does it start?
It starts at 8 a.m.
Wow.
And we will
8
be...
8 o'clock on Saturday
it
morning?
It does.
I don't know.
Easy peasy.
Come on.
And we'll have tables from other area organizations that support families, and we'll have resources and information available. Really want families to come out with their kids.
Right.
And bring the wagons and
So you don't really have to have to run.
It's
with a fun run, it's really a walk, especially if you have kids with you. And
that's exactly
whatever.
Right. And we're calling it the Five Factors Fund walk because we're promoting the five protective factors.
Right.
And so all along the walk, we'll be educating folks about what those five factors are and all the things that individuals and families can do to support and strengthen.
So run through the five factors real quick. Parental resilience.
Parental resilience is all about a parent being able to bounce back after a crisis and learn from it, not fall apart.
Right. And not sort of bring it along with them as baggage going along. Social and emotional competence.
That's about the social and emotional competence of children. And of the five factors, it's the only one that actually relates to kids. All the other factors are about supporting and strengthening the parents and adults around the children.
So this competence is these are skill sets that we want to
foster in children,
right?
So that's all about kids being able to interact well with kids of the same age, to be age developmentally
appropriate. Play well with others.
Play well with others and be able to interact with adults appropriately.
Right, right. Good. And knowledge of child development and parenting skills.
Well, that one's critical.
Yeah.
Parenting is, as I said, really hard, and we should all be able to ask for help, but also understand the difference between what a 2-year-old can do developmentally and a 4-year-old.
Yeah.
And clarify your expectations,
understanding structure. Yeah.
As we talked about earlier, it's really important not only for parents and other caretakers, but child care providers and teachers to understand all of those things, too. So we're just as supportive of quality early childhood education as we are parenting education, because it takes a village to raise a child. And having all of us understand those things better is just good for kids.
So concrete support for parents. This is partly, at least in my mind, about living wage, too.
It is. It's concrete supports in times of need.
Yeah.
And it's things like having food on your table, access to health care. The diaper bank here in this area is a huge concrete support to way more families than you would think.
Yeah.
Living wage jobs, good pay and benefits, all of those things together help to provide that foundation for a healthy childhood.
Right. And the last one that we mentioned, but I could have mentioned it first, is social connections.
Absolutely. If we learned anything else in the Oprah special last week, was that relationships.
Yeah.
Parents need to have a network of people that they can call on when they're stressed out.
Yes.
They're struggling with something. They need somebody to talk to, somebody to pick up their kids at the last minute because they can't get there at the end of the day.
Right.
Having your people.
And having, by the way, in that area in particular, having redundancy, not just the one neighbor who's always there for you. That neighbor could actually have something in his or her life that means that they can't be there that one time.
Right.
So you need more than one.
Exactly. You need your tribe.
You need a whole tribe of people. Mm-hmm. And so when people are traveling around during April and they see these blue pinwheels everywhere, and they probably will be everywhere.
Yes, they will.
Yes, they will. These are an awareness device for...
They are our campaign for great childhoods.
Right.
It's a national symbol of the kind of childhood we think every child deserves. And so we ask folks, organizations, congregations again, businesses, county government, to plant pinwheels.
Radio stations.
Absolutely. Plant pinwheel gardens throughout the state of North Carolina. Last year, I believe we had 88 counties had a pinwheel garden somewhere in them.
Goodness.
And we've got lots of really wonderful places where you'll see pinwheels in the Triangle area. In particular, you'll see them along Western Boulevard. In Raleigh, you'll see them at the American Tobacco Campus in Durham.
Right.
And at most of the social services and public health agencies across the state plant pinwheel gardens.
So where was the biggest one last year?
Biggest one last year is probably where the biggest one's been the last couple of years. It's actually at the Division of Public Health over on Six Forks Road in Raleigh.
In Raleigh.
It's a very well-traveled area, and the entire area in front of their three-building complex is just gorgeous.
Flooded with blue pinwheels.
And our First Lady, Kristen Cooper, came out to plant them with us last year there, and she and Governor Cooper will be planting a pinwheel garden again at the mansion this year. We're very excited for their support. She's been a wonderful advocate.
Great.
And she's a guardian ad litem still in her role as First Lady, yes.
That's fantastic. Well, some set of kids are lucky to have her as their advocate.
Absolutely.
In those cases. I mean, my goodness, that's terrific work. And that's a lot of work. That's not a photo op kind of job. It
is not. She is there to represent children in court that are known to the child welfare system.
That's fantastic. Well, good for you, First Lady Cooper. You keep up the good work. I'm not used to saying that to, high-level political officials lately. good job. But I have to remember, a lot of them are doing a great job.
She's particularly doing a wonderful job. She's been a part of a group of other first ladies across the country that have gotten educated about the Adverse Childhood Experience Study and are really trying to figure out what can we be doing. And those first ladies are trying to advocate and elevate the conversation in their states, which is really exciting.
Absolutely fantastic. Well, another hour has expired, Sharon. And so we're gonna hold on to you here at WCHL. We're going to record another program. You'll be on in another week and talk some more about this. And I thank you for joining us, and we'll see you all again in a week. Right here at 97.9 The Hill.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.